This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
This is Becca Starr.
And David Jagannath.
And we're here about to record on Plateau, the public art, across the street from the casual passerby I met by Bratzo Dmitrievich. And we're here with Jean-Michel and
Genevieve.
And Zucker.
And we're about to just start our conversation. Yeah. So, go ahead.
Kind of what we wanted to start with is maybe ask everyone what we want to define as public art. Because is it just something, is it required that the public just see it? Or is it something maybe government funded? You know, because a lot of work that government funds. And then in that sense, the public has, you know, a larger say into what can be art.
Do you guys want to come around? We can all sit down and just it's really just supposed to be informal. So.
Yeah.
It can be informed, I guess.
So. Yeah.
I don't think it should be defined by whether it's funded by the government or not. Like, this is not funded by the government, and this is supposed to be public art.
Yes.
So, that wouldn't qualify.
It's
If it is funded by the government, then it's not.
It wouldn't make any difference.
It wouldn't. Okay.
No. See, in this case, it's not funded by.
It's simply something
that is subject to. In my view, it's a certain tendency of contemporary art to be less private, more public. There are various strategies to do that. It's relatively old ambition, not so old, but and I think the strategies can be different, and Bradshaw has found one way of addressing this issue by taking people in the street and giving them back to the street.
Does it make a difference? I know Michael started saying earlier tonight that it was very weird for him, considering it's a place that he walks by every day, and he's worried about it being on Fisher Bennett because, you know, it's his classrooms and everything like that. And we were discussing how usually Bracho's work is more like it's a passerby that will pass by maybe once or twice again in the time that it's being viewed. How do you think that this public work specifically changes because its subject is, in fact, an inhabitant of the area?
It's true. I mean, by a pure coincidence, he happens to be a student in my class.
No way!
Yeah. But, you know, I saw a certain resemblance, but I didn't dare ask him because I thought, if he's not the person, it's totally inappropriate. Are you the person who is on the poster? You say, I'm totally crazy. And it happens that the other person is somebody I know very well, Laura. So, by coincidence, these are two people
that
I end up knowing. But I think, even though it's a coincidence, I think it's a good point. It's the idea of coincidence that somebody you don't know, suddenly you will know him almost intimately. And it could be anybody.
Yeah.
So no, that's the disquieting idea.
That kind of brings up a question that I had in terms of kind of site specificity in public art. Because what's interesting is in this piece is that, you know, Bratzo has done this work repetitive. Like, he's done this over and over again for the last, you know, 40 years. And yet, we have different types of public. You know, in this case, it's a place where people live. You know, other places are Eastern Europe. So do you find it interesting how the public affects kind of the different types of public find it? I mean, I don't know if you guys understand it or want to say anything about it.
You mean, like, about the fact that it's relative to where it's going to be? I guess, like, in the place, like, in the United States, when you see a picture, you expect that it's going to be an advertisement, right? So you say, like, this guy there, like, why am I supposed to see this picture? Does it mean that, you know, like, two
what
blocks later?
To buy?
Yeah, I'm supposed to buy something. Yeah. Maybe it's something about America. Maybe something, you know, like Benetton ad.
Definitely. It looks like a Benetton ad.
So it sort of displaces, it sort of can make you anxious somehow because there's a question and there's no answer if you, like, because you guys know what it's about, but, like, if, I mean, there's no explanation whatsoever. So I guess it sort of displaces your expectations.
Yeah. As two people coming in, not being part of Penn, not being, you know, knowing exactly, I'm assuming you didn't know about his work beforehand. Did you see this before you came to the conversations? Did you see the work above here?
No.
No.
we're looking down.
That's what I'm hearing so many people saying, is that they're just not...
You don't look that high up.
It's true,
in a very strange angle.
Or like if you go, like, precisely from the street, you would see it, but we came from, like...
You were
Yeah.
But something that you said about what makes public art public, I would tend to agree that it's not the provenance of the funding, rather it's the framing of the work. And what's interesting is that, okay, then public art would be something that doesn't provide a frame, but then having it on a canvas is giving it a frame, and that's what you were saying about the particularity of choosing somebody on a campus, because a campus is not exactly like any other space in a city or outside. I feel like that space perhaps is going to be a building that's going to belong to Penn again. So it's not really outside, and the fact that
it's still enclosed.
He's very enclosed, and I think perhaps when he was doing this 30 years ago in Eastern Europe, it had a very different connotation. When he's doing it today, with Facebook on a campus that's dominated by these things, and I think it's also interesting because he's the sort of the face he's chosen. Perhaps there are a lot of people on campus who've seen him before walking by. They don't know who he is, and now they will be. You're forced to recognize that there's an aspect of celebrity in everydayness as well. There are thousands of people you see in a campus, for instance, and you register their presence, except you will never speak to them, and you will never know their names. I mean, this is even more pronounced in a place like Princeton, where you will see the same. I mean, every year you can pick out the people who are the first-year students because you've never seen them. They don't have that kind of celebrity. But, you know, now this kid is going to...
Yeah, he's walking down the street, and he already is talking about how people are stopping him and being like, I feel like exactly like you were saying, like, I feel like maybe that's you.
Déjà vu, question mark.
Exactly. I find it interesting that what you're saying about how specifically putting art in a campus automatically changes that sort of...
What interests me is that then you have kind of different... we say public art, and we use the word public very, I think, liberally. We say, you know, public as in, you know, a society that are collectively together, but there's different types of public. You know, we put this in a square, you know, in Eastern Europe, it's a completely different connotation to someone that we put it here on, like, a campus in a very, you know, where there's grass and, you know, lots of, like,
well, it used
know,
to mean, or it used to less reference advertising or something like that, and more reference a change in government is what Brazzo has been saying, and, you know, what we've been reading about, which I find very interesting, because this would never mean changing government to be here. It would, you know, but it's just,
public art in Europe has a different meaning.
Yeah.
Public intellectual has a different meaning. And even the links between universities and the culture of a country at large are very, very different.
But that's also like we're working with the idea that we have to protect our arts in Europe from like American invasion.
Right.
So I guess
I'm curious. Wait, elaborate on that.
What connotation on the idea of public art? Sort of like art that's protective against like sort of lower products that come from America. So it's not like the higher culture, of course, it's sort of the but then of course there's a double bind, because if it's funded by the government, what kind of liberty that the artist
has. That's exactly actually what happens with Plateau that we're standing on. I was actually having a discussion with the university architects who helped plan, I don't know, Jean-Michel, if you've heard about this. That it was supposed to go over by the cinema first around
I remember all the discussions.
And it was, or it was first supposed to be by the bookstore, then got misplaced from the bookstore to the cinema, and then got placed here. And in the end, the funniest part was, while it was supposed to be a commissioned work, all of the buildings are owned by the university, so it was ultimately their decision for its location. And it actually caught a lot of criticism for being in this location, because it was taking away from the field that students were so, you know.
And also, what brings up kind of something I was interested in, when people think of public art, you know, they think it has to be, you know, something kind of bold in some way. And it's like, when we look at this, you know, I don't think if anyone was told that this was a public art piece, they would necessarily know that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think
it's
if someone was told public art, that they were told that if they were going to be told that they were going to put some benches up, you know.
But and to be honest, yeah. I when I was told this was art, I just laughed.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have the same reaction.
It was a very nice way of providing some seating. Kind of communal sitting, maybe to play chess.
So that asked the question that I was
things
kind
like
of,
that. But when I was told that an artist had got a lot of money to produce this as art, which I then found interesting because it changed my idea of art.
I just wonder how a piece like this, or with even the same constructs, was meant to be over by the bridge where there's not nearly space like this.
But what I was interested in is, so these are seating, like I said, do you feel, so that was what I was kind of bringing up to you, do you think that kind of public art has to be something that is a gesture in some sense, some sort of kind of provocative gesture that makes you think, you know, this is could be an advertisement, this could be, you know, something, or
this
is this...
be, but
or
not, this, not necessarily. I think that this goes in this direction, but like any kind of performance goes in this direction, but you also kind of have like very substantive kind of art. I mean, I see like public art as being defined by the accessibility that people have towards this piece. But
do you, that's an interesting thought, because a lot of times a lot of people have felt that certain public art that's inaccessible to the public is almost like an onslaught onto an unwilling viewer. And how, that was one of my main questions is, we had many disagreements about how much information to present in our publicity for this piece specifically, seeing as it is, there's no explanation for it. And many people in the class found that it was almost offensive to assume that the viewer was going to, quote, understand the
but
work.
But then you have the difficulty.
Oh, offensive
to the
Michael?
No. To the viewers or to the art, in general, just to assume that there's an understanding that comes along with it, so, and how okay is it to create?
And
it brings
up a question: is like, how much do you educate someone on a public art piece? You know, do you think do you think it's necessary to educate someone, or is it part of being a public art piece the sense that it's an individual relationship to the work? You know, is it, you know, part of this discussion is, you know, what is our responsibility, if we have a responsibility, to educate the public about this installation, you know, or do we not have to? You know, could we easily have just put this up and kept going and said this is public art? And
I think it's dangerous if a work of art needs the education of the public nearby. I think it should provide the education by itself. To give you an example, this weekend I was in Brooklyn in the Brooklyn Museum, and they have a very interesting, very political exhibition right now on political art from the islands. You have Puerto Rico, Cuba, and so on. And we were with a group that included many children. And what was very funny and very difficult for everybody was to tell them what was art and what was not, or what you could do with art or what you couldn't do. At times they could play with the things, and at times they couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
See, there were things that were meant to be open and closed, and you had televisions inside, and other PCs where you had sound and objects that they were not supposed to touch, and they were running and catching them. Whereas here, I think clearly it's relatively classical medium, bi-dimensional, no text, just the portrait, the Warholian idea, sending back the mirror to the culture, and that's it. So this is they get it.
They see it now.
Jean-Michel just pointed to some people.
Yes. Yes.
Is that education? Is that our education? Is that we have you point? You stand on a corner and point.
Maybe what you could
say, that's art.
It might be a nice little thing with your class. You could find various little contraptions that you could put on the sidewalk.
That would just point
and
to it.
Like a little arrow.
Yes.
Or,
that was part of it. Because we are required to put some sort of
a few yards after,
description about it.
Have you thought of looking up?
I have.
Go back three steps.
But that's a new piece of art. Make an arrow thing. Look up.
Yes.
Are you sure you missed something?
Check again. Now, I can't tell you how many of people I've talked to have been like, oh, I'm working on this project for the public art piece that just went up on the Fresh Grocer facade. And they're like, what?
Yeah,
I'm like, well, have you been on 40th and Walnut? They're like, yeah. They're just people that just aren't looking up.
But it's part of what Brazzo is interested in, right, is the ambiguity between the five people that do know what it is and then the 5 million that don't know.
But isn't it part of the piece of art? I mean, the way I understand it, that's completely part of it, right?
Yeah.
The fact that people just don't understand.
Yeah, no,
like, they just dismiss it. That's
or that it can
rubbish.
Be interpreted.
Oh, well, it's just this guy there. Okay, well, that's weird.
Yeah.
And that's going to be...
Who is he?
So I guess it's like a work on like what is like democracy and like people in
absolutely.
The street.
That's a good point that actually I wanted to kind of... I was interested in the idea of kind of choice democracy that's in public art. You know, in a sense... You know, it's democracy in that everyone can kind of be involved and that anyone is kind of... Everyone is able to see kind of the work. But on the alternatively, you know, we're, in a sense, forcing you to see it, you know. We didn't ask you. It's like, oh, do you want us to kind of put this up for you? And so is there democracy in kind of public art, or is there an alternative where it's not really, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think the choice of this guy, I mean, it's like the way he was... The picture is taken, like, with the
big
hair. I mean, it's quite obvious. It's supposed to, like, symbolize some kind of, like, the man in the street that you see all the time. So if it's like that, then...
It's almost as if all the information you could provide from a certain point of view would be completely useless because, I mean, it's information about the artist and his project, but the information that photography would convey... in this particular piece is already there.
Yeah.
And I think people have this immediate understanding of photography that they don't, for instance, with sculpture or abstract art. And almost as if it's a call for attention, as if he's saying, you know, the only information that you could want would be more information about this person.
Interesting.
But that's the kind of information you can't get. That's the information you can't convey. Hopefully you're not giving out, you know, personal information about him. I mean, that's...
They don't even know his name.
That's
he's
what the Stasi would be doing.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's a call for attention to the people that are around you as well, and not
but
so much...
In the same time, there's something weird because you have a kind of deception. Just imagine that instead of this guy, you would have, like, a very striking picture, like, something really striking. But personally, I don't find this picture striking at all. Like,
no.
Very banal, and maybe this guy is your friend,
and you know.
But so you look up, and you're like, but
so it's not
why
Benetton.
Why am I
it's
supposed...
It's not the Benetton effect. Because Benetton, you had striking
pictures. Yeah, exactly.
And the link was not obvious.
Yeah,
but
whereas
they were all
here,
very
it's like...
Shocking.
Yeah.
And this is not shocking.
This is not shocking.
But I think the lack of information makes it something very similar to a lot of what contemporary art does, but also is more and more being co-opted by marketing. Because, for instance, in Paris this summer, in the metro, there were these spray paintings. And normally spray painting gets taken off very quickly. But here, it was a spot that was normally reserved for posters for movies, and it was just a spray painting of a woman, right, with no information. And
this happened in multiple places.
Yeah, in multiple train stations, and people thought, okay, well, this graphic artist has gone from being just a spray painter to being important enough that they're giving him space in the metro, right? And it turned out that it was actually an ad for the new Claude Chabrol film, and it was La Fille Coupée en Deux. So you had half this woman spray painted, and then 2 weeks later you had the title that would appear, and then a month later you knew that it was actually a poster in the process of becoming a poster.
Really?
So it was very interesting because at the very beginning, people were very excited about this because they said finally, you know, spray painting is being recognized as art. And then,
but then you mean like that
I
we
mean
could
that
look
if
at
I
this
saw
guy
this,
and, like,
I would expect like a month
two
later,
weeks.
You know, an American Apparel would open up there and they'd say, yes, we've been providing you with pictures of our models. And you'd go in the store and all these faces would be there, and then finally your desire for consumption would be so excited that you would completely dispense with everything you have. But what's interesting here is that there's no information, there will be no information, or even the kind of information you're giving, I think, doesn't really solve that lack of context.
Mm-hmm.
That you think is needed, or
no? That I think is essential to what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you get to some? How do you attract somebody's interest in an age which is saturated with with information is not giving them information.
Yeah. It's making them want something, like reaching for something. If you could, I'm just curious for just in general, if you could get information only either about who he is or about why he's there, which would be more interesting to you?
Why he's there?
Yeah. I mean, you mean him, right?
Yeah, him particularly.
Yeah. Why he's here?
Yeah.
Because if it's linked to his identity, then we would know. I mean,
then you
like
would,
first, maybe he's a very famous person, and but then why he's there would be the answer. Like, just who is, just doesn't.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Because I think what he did was to take people who are in a sort of neutral attitude, like the passerby. And, you know, it's funny because Michael was in my class and we were discussing Baudelaire on modernity, where he has this text about passerbys, the flaneur, and so on. So it's really... It was then that I said, "Are you the one?" Finally, we're talking about the passerby.
Was he surprised when you asked him? Or?
No. He was happy. I think, you know, people make... In his case, he was... I think the two subjects agreed to, and some might not want to be, of course...
Or realize what it was
like
going
to be. Yeah. Or you could say, no, I don't look like that. I look better in real life. But obviously, they were happy with the way... They were caught, sort of bland and neutral, expressionless.
He has a sort of half smile to him.
A smirk.
Such a little smirk.
Happy enough,
yeah, he does.
That brings it. Do you feel that, you know, we have this one person that was kind of brought from the public and brought to kind of the spotlight. You know, are we in a sense, how does that kind of reflect on ourselves? You know, am I envious? You know, it's kind of, you know, this is a person that we've been talking to. He came and he became a celebrity in a sense, you know.
Yeah.
Is there something that you either, like, you know, revere? Is the whole point that you kind of revere someone that is just, could have been you, you know? Like, you could have been walking by and said, been asked to take a photo.
Isn't that, like, the new aspiration, precisely the new sort of lower aspiration of democratic people being, like, in the TV show that you're nobody and because... Although you're nobody, you have nothing particularly interesting to say, or you have done nothing, but still you're famous.
Yeah.
So, but here, I mean, he didn't do anything degrading to be there, so I think it's a good way to be.
Yeah.
I mean, but I mean, like, what would you admire? You would admire his capacity of being at the right place.
That's part of what it is, right? I mean, the fact that he could be anyone. We didn't ask. Brazzo did not go up to him and say, "Oh, what are you studying? You know, what kind of person are you?" You know, the criteria was that he was there, you know, and that any of us could have been there.
Yeah.
And
but yeah, I don't know. I don't envy him. I think he's also instrumentalized in the work of the artist, so he's just instrumental. He's famous as a means.
It's a demystifying attitude, and I think it's something I see with the younger people. I could see this with my daughter when she was six or so. She happened to be with me at various conferences where I was filmed, and then there was either something on television or a film in the room nearby. And then she assumed that every time I spoke at those, in those public places, I would be filmed and I would then be on television. And once it happened, I gave a talk and she said, "Well, how come you're not on television?" You know, she thought that inevitably I would be on television. And I think this is, you know, this is this new generation that accept this as part of life much more than what we tend to do. You know, this is why I was mentioning Warhol. I think we've moved from that moment when he made people believe that, oh, 15 minutes of fame and so on. Not even that.
It's 15 minutes of anonymity. It's, you know, your aspiration is to get your face on a building, be famous. Here's a face of somebody who's not famous on a building. So you can't even have that aspiration anymore. And it's funny you mentioned Baudelaire, because I was in a class we were reading recently as well, and the poem on the blind man, he says, why are the blind men are the only people who look up?
That's true.
And then the last, he says, what are the blind men looking for in the sky? And he just drives him insane because he's looking down and everybody else is looking at eye level. So placing this up there as well is very sort of defiant because it's, you know, it's not even addressed at the direction of your gaze.
Yeah.
You would have to be really
looking for it.
You have to be in the right place as well to see it.
Yeah.
If you walk down Walnut Street, I mean, you could walk down every day.
I mean, even from our view here, it's obscured, you know? Yeah. You could easily miss it if you're just sitting here.
But so, I'm assuming if it's when it's on the English building, everybody will see it.
People are going to be walking in and being
Although, well, that now it's on a private building, you know? I mean, this is still, it's a parking garage, but it's on a busy intersection.
Right.
There you're more, like, in the center of campus, and mostly students are going to be, you know, walking into those buildings. And then it's going to be interesting to see kind of the different perspectives. Now you have someone that's your fellow student here, you know, this is of someone that's in the area and that lives here. There you're going to have someone, student, how that kind of plays out as a different public might also be interesting. Michael's already mentioned that, you know, people have talked to him and meet that he's known, or that people that don't know and just come up to him. And he's
so did you make, like, interesting encounters after that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, you know, dates?
But I think it must can't underestimate how hard it must be for him. So if he has section or he has to not say something stupid while his picture is on the building, because everybody can say, he's the one who said it.
And that brings the question, does he now have authority, you know, as a kind of a public figure, once you've kind of been put up, you know, in this thing, does he now have authority? Is he now, you know, that guy that's up there, and does that give him any kind of sort of powers, you know?
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because he's not the author of this work, so what kind of authority can he have?
I mean, that also brings up kind of, Bratz was kind of interested in authorship, and he's, you know, now who is the author, you know, of the work? You know, Bratz didn't really decide. He picked a corner and he walked by and he saw this person. He says, "Can I take a photo of you?" But he didn't have any control on, you know, who was going to be walking around there at that moment in time. And so, you know, who is the author now? Is it the public that is the author of this work? You know, or is Michael, in a sense, the author now that his photo is up there?
So I think he, like, you know, the pact with the devil. He has sold his soul. He has signed a contract.
So he's still an instrument
I mean, you know, that's part of the thing. He had to sign something that he probably didn't read.
And did the date that's wrong.
The date was actually wrong.
Let's imagine the gothic version.
Yes.
You know, Bradshaw as the devil.
Yes.
And he takes the picture of the anonymous passerby. They sign something and they don't know that they sold their souls.
Yeah.
Well, it's
and then, you
know,
so then you could question, do you think Bratz is successful in this, you know? Do you think he's successful in making this a passerby, you know? Is there still an inherent authorship of, you know, the artist as creator of the work, and, you know, or is there clearly an
The author is the serial nature of the thing, the fact that he's done it elsewhere, and so it's not. If it was the first time he did it, maybe authorship would be more in dispute.
What about his piece, the painting by Krasimir Klaika? I don't know if you've heard of it, Jean-Michel. It's Bratzos set up a milk carton on the street, and the first person to run over it, he tried to stop them, asked them if they believed that the splash was created was art, and if they said yes, had them sign it. which I found very interesting, it really brings up issues of who is the artist, Bratz for setting it up, or the person, Krasimir Klaika, ended up being the person that ran it over.
And also, I think, I mean, the fact that it is repetitive, in a sense, he is removing it. If he had done it just once, I would think that's more an authorship, because if he's done it over and over again, and it's the exact same process, you know, it gets into kind of this conceptual kind of themes that we kind of deal with, where, you know, he's doing the same thing, you know. He has, like, a set instruction list, you know. Now we have the instructions that you can, you know, go take your photograph on a corner, get a printer, and blow it up. And
but,
you know,
a lot of conceptual art has to do with repetitiveness.
Yeah.
That is that you can identify a certain gesture.
I mean, you have soul of
would not be art, like Miel Toroni painting little squares and so on. They've done it all their lives, so now we know what it is, or Christo wrapping buildings and so on. If you wrap a building here once, it looks like a construction site.
Yeah.
When I used to drive to Princeton every day, there was a Christo in the woods, a beautiful building with a nice blue plastic wrapping. You know, maybe the contractor could be called an artist. Obviously, they didn't know who Christo was, but it was really a Christo. If Christo had been there, he said, "Oh, somebody's imitating me," but it was purely, you know, to wrap up something that was unfinished.
an unknowing artist.
But if we recognize a crystal now, because we know that again and again.
So you think Braco would be upset if someone did the same thing and said, this is my work, I've been doing it before? Do you think he would be in some sense hypocritical of his own conception, you know? Something of removing authorship if you actually try to impersonate him.
Absolutely. If you found an anonymous Serbian artist who's been doing this before and elsewhere, he'd be upset.
Interesting. Absolutely. You know, because part of what's interesting is he takes a lot of photographs with famous people.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And things in
part of his catalog.
Yeah. And so it's interesting.
That's also very funny. I love that series.
I don't know if they're his friends particularly, or he runs.
Or just celebrities.
But celebrities. And he'll have Nina, his wife, take pictures of him with these celebrities. And they're just, you know, smiling. Yeah. They're very. But he's the face that no one knows.
He's interested in a lot of these, you know, you see these famous photographs. You know, of these people, but it'll be a group of people, and you'll always see in the caption, you know, so-and-so, and then you'll see unknown, you know? And we were speaking with him yesterday, and he was saying, you know, they must be someone, you know? They are friends with everyone, they knew something, and yet, you know, we refer to them as an unknown person, you know? And he said, what makes them kind of different from, you know, these celebrities? And in a sense, what makes Michael different from, you know, everyone else, you know? And who decides? I mean, to get back on kind of authorship and public art and things, you know, who decided that he was going to be, you know, this celebrity, you know, was it Braco? Yeah, you know, in this case, but in kind of an art historical sense,
there are many people who do this in real life, who try to hang out with famous people and at the last minute are in a group photograph to show to their friends. I had a friend of mine who did that systematically in Venice.
Systematically.
In Venice, he would wait until a huge group of Japanese tourists was ready to take the group photograph. And at the last minute, he would just come and smile with them and then disappear. And, of course, he never saw the result, but his enjoyment was to imagine that when they would come back, he would say, who is this?
would you say that he's an artist? He's a performance artist. Well,
because he never saw the result, because of course he could not be seen.
But if he doesn't see himself, does he see himself as an artist? Because if he doesn't, then he's
saw himself as a joker.
That brings up an interesting point of, like, you know, we talk about being part of the collective society and being very public and being connected to everyone. But in a sense, do we all have this desire, you know, to be isolated from, you know, society, to not, you know, he wants to be seen.
Special.
He wants to be special, you know. Mm. You know, Michael's somewhat terrified.
But I don't think Michael brought that on himself at all. He was approached for this.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways that makes it very
different. Do you know how this happened exactly? Did Braco first take the photograph?
We were actually...
Then ask him?
Well, no,
we
talked... We actually were speaking to Michael just a little bit
before.
Well,
how did it happen?
He was walking by and... Braco was walking with Aaron Levy, Braco had saw him, and then they approached him, and they did give him kind of an introduction to kind of
before they took the picture. Oh, I see. Okay.
And so, and so that kind of also brings up an interesting point that I'm always interested in, the idea of process and you know, this is a public art piece, and how does public art, in a sense, show the process if the process is so important? You know, part of the process is that it's the process is very integral in understanding it as kind of its relation to the public. But, you know, when we see this photograph, we don't necessarily get that. You know, in what ways can, you know, the curator maybe, like, is the relationship with the curator so necessary? Or how does the artist, in a sense, kind of, like, emphasize the public nature in terms of process in the work? You know, I don't know if you guys have any thought.
I think what I kind of thought of when I compose my... This isn't actually a response to your thought, but...
Ignore me.
Okay, I'm just going to go with it. I just think about when he was approached and he was like... They told him a little bit what it was about, but I wonder if he felt... If he now... They told him about what it was about, but he was under the impression that it was many people in one area. And so I wonder if Michael personally, who seems to feel that he is particularly affected by this piece in a way that no one else will ever be, he seems to feel a little bit kind of betrayed by the artist, almost.
Yeah,
because he's really... It was very different than you would have assumed. He was kind of like, well, I just feel like it's weird because it's just me. And, like, Laura's in, he's like, I wish it was inside, which I thought was a very interesting idea, considering, you know, public art. Is he really, he would have preferred
how
it.
How informed does the subject need to be, you know? We, in Formosa's process, you know, we had his signature and said, okay, we have his photograph, let us now go forth and do whatever we need to do, right? But was it, should it have been, you know, if some a subject is involved in this, to how much involved should they be in the project, you know? Like I said, we're questioning authorship and public, and, you know, he's now...
I don't see this as Michael's art at all. I gotta throw that out there. I consider him subject and not...
But, you know, I think it's... in this context, you started asking how different this would have been in Sarajevo, in Paris, in Belgrade. In an American context, this is one of the paradoxes of American democracy, that everybody is the same, but everybody thinks they are different. So,
because your obsession with being special is like,
and what happens once you get that special? You don't necessarily want it. You know, you really.
I don't know whether you know.
I don't think he
film?
Wanted it.
No.
I honestly think
he hates being up there. Actually,
he's nervous about it going on Fisher Bennett.
There's a film. I mean, I don't know whether you know it. A silent film by King Vidor called The Crowd. You know that, in which you see somebody was born on July the 4th, and so in a relatively modest family. But because he's born on July the 4th, they say, oh, you'll be the next president. All his life he has this ambition. But he's a total failure.
And because of the pressure.
He falls into total anonymity. And in the end, he's just with a crowd laughing in a movie house, in a theater.
Yes.
And looking at the audience watching the film. And he's totally anonymous. But I think this is quite typical. That could be one of the meanings here. In the American context, obviously, this would not have the same meaning if it is an African American man seen in Sarajevo or in Berlin, where you don't see so often African American men.
How do you think this changes? I mean, we've talked about commerce and advertising and things like that, but what I'm also interested by is that the piece actually cost a lot more to do here. And how do you think that changes? Does that change the meaning at all? It costs more to print and to put. We had to pay a lot of money for it to be installed.
We couldn't just hang it. You know, in a lot of other places, you know, he used to use string almost
and just.
Whereas we, as you know, other conversations we're talking about, you know,
I think it was nearly $1,000 to put twisty ties around, you know, the mesh.
That's ridiculous.
But it's proportional to the cost of life as well.
But I'm wondering, does that change the meaning of the piece at all?
Yeah, what I was interested in, is, you know, and this piece is now, like, bolted, or, like, you know, and how does that change the meaning, you know, as opposed to something that's kind of hanging? Is this now not, you know, the ephemerality that we were kind of thinking, you know, if it's just hung and it's going to be removed, you know? If it's, like, physically, like, you know, structurally a tie to the piece, and it's something that you could imagine being there for, you know, years to come. You know, do you think that changes the meaning of how?
No, but I think money is an important factor, and it's good that it costs some money. It's not just something you Xerox on bad paper and you could reproduce endlessly. It's not a poster in that sense. It's not a sort of off print on a cheap linotype or, you know, earlier technologies. It has to cost some money. That's my psychoanalytic side.
To make it more legitimized,
you know, it has to cost.
I mean, like, that's an American value also, that, you know, even like for anything. I mean, that, you know, you don't think it means anything unless it costs money. You know, if someone did it for absolutely free, would we consider this art if we just printed it out, you know, from a piece of paper and put it up? Is it now considered an art unless there was some sort of production value and it took, you know, the sweats of our curatorial labor to put it together, you know? Does that add to the value of the work?
Imagine the reverse. Imagine you spend $2,000, which is more or less what all this costs, buying a Xerox machine that allows everybody to put their faces on the glass, print it, and stick it to the wall. That would be a very different concept.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. See? could be done one of these days, maybe. You could do that.
Watch out, because that might detach your retina.
You'll have to sign. You'll have to sign.
Sign first.
It's a little less
dangerous. This time we ask.
Only
you know,
people
we
don't
do first and then
their
tell them what it's about.
From their glaucoma, from their retinas, and so on.
Sign first.
What would also be interesting would be if he had taken pictures of all the people, even the ones who said no, and then had put down a caption saying, these are the people who said no.
Yeah.
And these are the people who said yes. Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah. What does it mean? Do we know that he said yes when we see the picture?
I mean,
I mean, you know that. But if I'm walking down the street, perhaps I think, you know, he got his picture taken.
I would think so.
But if somebody tells me all this stuff about contemporary art, I could think perhaps, you know, he had his picture taken. Perhaps this is his ID photo.
Maybe we went to Google and,
you know,
typed in his name.
Right.
No, but, you know, he's relatively, he's a good-looking young man. Imagine a really scary, scarred, toothless
person. He doesn't
person.
Like this photo.
He doesn't like
this
photo.
He does not like this photo.
I saw him. I think he's obviously not the best.
Not the,
yeah.
Different.
I mean, that's a
I mean, this is just proof that he's good looking, that he can afford to be narcissistic about his picture. I mean, if he was snaggly tooth and, you know,
I mean, it's quite obvious that this picture is not taken to look the best.
But I've had many people, actually, I've had this discussion in other art classes, and they've said that there's no way that he was random. He's too good looking.
No, but yeah, because there's something interesting in his face.
Yeah.
That's
No, absolutely.
So I would think he's an actor.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Okay. But
yeah, no, it's interesting and kind of bring back kind of this process of how we picked and things. I think it's interesting that, you know, he wasn't the only one that we took a photo of, that Bratza took a photo of. You know,
there were more than just
we have
Laura.
We have another photo of Laura, right? And we have a whole bunch of, we have like five or six other photos.
Yeah.
And like, you know, does that also in a sense betray the idea, you know, that he had to pick a photo, you know? Mm-hmm. There wasn't, and did he pick, we didn't see all the photos, right? So,
no,
you know,
no.
Maybe was there an unattractive person, you know?
That's it.
That was,
I mean,
or
Laura
imagine somebody attractive just taken picking his own nose.
Yeah.
But I mean, also, there's the question of what can this person say? He can't say, I look fantastic. I mean, he can't say, yes, I'm on the building and it's great and I'm really happy that I'm up there and I look really good. I mean, he's almost obliged to say that he doesn't like his picture. And otherwise, it would be just, you know, beyond anything anybody. But it would be beyond. Nobody would be able to deal with him afterwards if he's just going around saying, have you seen my picture on the building?
Look, he can just be his own advertisement.
Right.
He can be your, your role and stand and point.
It would really affect you much more than it could affect, like, just being like, oh my god, that's me.
Yeah, I would be terrified, you know, if I had a huge photo of myself.
Well, this,
I
mean, this is also very interesting because it goes back to the terror of photography, you know, in the beginning when
stealing
people think
souls.
It
yeah,
takes away a layer
yeah,
of your skin
yeah.
When
you,
get
Nadal,
your picture taken.
Nadal believes
yeah,
that.
And Balzac. Nadal
wait,
thought
Nadal
it was,
believed that?
Yeah,
yeah.
No,
I
well,
no
Nadal
idea.
Said about Balzac that
yeah, yeah.
Balzac thought this, and he said, well, he could have afforded to have his picture taken a few hundred times because he was so fat. Then he wouldn't die because the layers, he would just lose weight.
Each time you take a layer.
But I mean, this does strip him of something.
It
of
strips
his aura,
him of his identity.
Because
it's,
him.
It's a,
we were asking about, like, we were just stating, right? Like, we didn't, like, we don't, like, Bratza had no idea about his, what major he did, anything about him. He chose him solely, you know, on there's this person standing there, you know?
Yeah.
And in a sense, does Michael feel that, you know, very much so, you know? Does he feel, you know, that, you know, they didn't, no one really asked, you know, who am I, you know, what makes me special, you know, all they cared about is my face and things, you know, do you think he feels that he lost some of his identity by, you know, becoming, you know, this public spectacle, you know?
I would feel like I've been instrumentalized somehow, like...
But maybe you'd be happy at the same time, no?
Or objectifying?
Not
no.
No.
You'd probably say no, though, I mean, to be honest.
I would say no, yeah, of course.
You like
yeah.
But no. There's something like on his face.
But there's
that
an unawareness.
Cool though.
Though. Yeah.
Like I
he
would
said,
not.
He said he just woke up.
You mean if you had his face, you would have said yes.
If I had his face, yeah.
But there's, yeah. I mean, there's an abstraction though in someone coming up to you. You know, now, yeah. In you know, hindsight, it's 20/20. I'm sure now if he'd think, oh, they're gonna put my face everywhere. You know, he probably maybe, and based on his responses, would say no. But if someone just goes up to you, you know, and just says, you know, it happens all the time with surveys and things.
Somebody
never
came
really
up to me and asked me for my voice once, and I said yes.
Yeah.
They asked me. I was sitting outside a museum actually, and they asked me to say, something three times, and it was for a perfume ad, and they said if they used my voice they would get in touch with me, which is absolutely ridiculous because they had no information about me.
It's so abstract, though, that,
and I believed them. I said yes, I said whatever they were telling me to say,
and you didn't give them any information.
No, I mean, it was, they were obviously doing something else, I mean, under the guise of of a promotional activity.
Well, like, when you're so like far detached and you have no understanding of who the artist is, you know, you know, it just seems like, oh, whatever, you know, this guy, you know. And I think he knew Aaron, right?
Yeah, no.
He knew Aaron, so...
Maybe. I don't even know.
Because he was in the... Michael, I,
no. No, he knew...
He knew you.
No, I didn't know.
Oh.
It's also the campus. No, he thinks nothing bad can happen.
He's in my class now.
Oh,
I didn't know him before.
Funny. Yeah.
This is really true. I didn't know him. I was told last spring that they chose somebody who was happened to be a student because he was in front of Bennett Hall. And he accepted, and that's all I knew. And then he was in my class, not knowing that I was connected with Slot. Pure coincidence. It was only at the beginning, I don't know, there was another activity, and I put the name, and so he recognized
it. I mean, that brings up also kind of the point, is do you think there's a difference between the people that'll see this person as just kind of an ambiguous figure and the people that kind of knows him? You think their opinion, you know, changes of this individual more than just the people? Because, you know, you can be just like your own casual passerby, and like kind of pass this and see, oh, who's this individual? And, you know, if we kind of in an ideal situation say this person goes, oh, who is this? You know, I could be that person. You know, who decides? And you have this amazing epiphany. And of course, that's how art works. And, you know, we have in this ideal world. But then, how does that change versus, you know? You know, oh, I know that person. You know, how does that change? Are you now more envious, or are you now more intrigued by the work?
Or intrigued
I think
by
you
the
should
person?
Change the way or people upset? Walk. Should make them walk dangerously, because I've noticed that it is dangerous to walk and look up because you trip all the time. So that would already be.
You think
a
it's
result.
To just keep people on their toes?
I mean, that's the point. I mean,
we should probably start to take that.
I know. Yeah, we're almost done.
We are going to be frozen.
Yeah, so this one. Yes. Yeah, so sorry, but thank everyone for our conversation, and this was a
very productive
conversation
okay.
in October,
cold
October, and
coming.
Thank you for coming.
Okay, so